Hello, everybody. Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 79 for November 2nd. Chance Watson, Josh McDonald bring you the news today. And this episode, for the last time, I wonder why, it might be election day, is brought to you by Andy Boyle for Fire Commissioner. Andy Boyle is the current commissioner in Sub-District 3 for Kootenai County Fire and Rescue and has been in the position for almost 4 years. The 30 years of first responder experience he has includes 27 years at the Kootenai County Sheriff's Office, where he retired with the rank of captain. While at the Sheriff's Office, he was the deputy director of the Office of Emergency Management and the chairman of the Local Emergency Planning Committee. He has also served for 15 years as a volunteer firefighter and been a member of the North Idaho Type 3 team for 20 years. As a member of the current Board of Commissioners, the board has maintained a strong fiscally sound agency. This past May, the voters approved a bond measure to replace two existing fire stations and build a new station to better serve our community. With all the growth, the board is working with the Kootenai County Commissioners and the City of Post Falls for impact fees. This will lessen the burden on the taxpayers. Kootenai County Fire and Rescue continues to be the leader in this area, and Andy is proud to say that he is a member of this organization. Remember to vote Andy Boyle for Kootenai County Fire and Rescue Sub-District 3 Commissioner on November 2nd. Paid for by Andy Boyle for Commissioner. Josh, what's going on?
I hate this day every
year. It is election day. It is a journalist's nightmare.
It's just not...
No, you know, I'm glad that everybody is so accommodating and thoughtful on this day.
Oh, and polite.
And polite.
And
generous.
It's one of those days where
everyone gets along.
Yeah. Oh, you know.
Peace among men kind of thing.
It's, for lack of a better term, like it's a day about people who need to feel important. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for us, that responsibility falls at our feet.
Yes. And we're damned if we do and damned if we don't.
Sure, sure.
Contrary to popular belief, the journalists in the Hagedon News Network, we don't, you know, hop on a flight with Wolf Blitzer at CNN or who's the other pretty fella at Fox News?
I don't watch Fox News.
Well, I don't watch national news. But
oh, I don't. Yeah, I don't.
You're not familiar with the anchors? How do you not know, at least know the anchors' names?
All I know is there's one of them that's got a really punchable
Shepard
face.
Smith, that's it. No, you're talking about Tucker Carlson.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, regardless if you agree or disagree with that man.
He looks like a bowl of oatmeal.
He looks strange. But Tucker Carlson, we just lost him as a listener. That's okay.
Oh, shucks.
But Shepard Smith, like, you know, we don't hang out with these individuals. We have no larger goal, or we're not part of the evil large liberal mass media that tries to dissuade individual, and that's you know, that's always the, or you know, conservative if you're on the other side of that spectrum.
Speak for yourself. I'm a monster.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a monster.
What is your goal to get the chemtrails going again?
Oh yeah, chemtrails.
Yeah, the chemtrails, or maybe get some 5G towers going on for some mind control.
You know, I'm all about any time I can give the government more control over myself.
Less freedom's the better, right?
I'm actually...
You can't think for yourself, Josh.
Very much pro-taxation without representation. And I've honestly thought maybe I should petition the Queen. Hey, a couple hundred years ago, we were just rebellious teenagers. Can we come home?
You know, Canada honestly kind of has that one foot in, one foot out thing.
Yeah, man.
Like, they are their own people, but at the same time, they're not.
We can stay united.
Under the kingdom.
Under the kingdom.
I think they still have democratic elections over there too, Josh.
Yeah. I mean, not a whole lot has to change. It's just the leader.
I think they still have angry, debatable, contentious elections over there as well. I mean, I don't think that changes.
You know what?
Yes, I understand. I still understand that it's real simple to just have the Queen, but
we can rally around the Queen.
We can rally around the Queen.
We can always rally around the Queen. She can move in any direction.
God save.
And more than one space at a time.
God save the Queen.
Yes. Agreed.
Yes. Probably the only people that are more stressed than us on these days are people affiliated with campaigns and the politicians themselves.
You are literally going to be told whether a majority of your neighbors do or do not like what you do.
Right. Or what your thoughts are.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could be definitely taxing.
I'm fully aware that if I was to ever run for any sort of position, I would have to campaign hard because at face value, more than half the people in the town that I live in would probably be like, yeah, not voting for that guy.
That's not just on general principle. They wouldn't even listen to what you have to say.
Well, here in Osborne, they'd be like, Kellogg guy, boo.
What?
Boo.
Well, and that's county positions. Speaking of, I mean, there's no way that I, off the top of my head, I can't name every single race. But, I mean, up in Sandpoint, they'll start up there. I know that there's a contentious – there's like 8 people running for 2 city council positions. So, lots of debate going on in that one. Coeur d'Alene, Kootenai County, man, it's – I mean, it's filled to the brim. We can't even go through all of them. There's just so many people running for so many different positions down there.
And that – Those Kootenai County races in all of them. It seems like each race has
everything is heightened.
Has like one guy on the left that's salty, one guy on the right that's salty, and then like 4 people in the middle, kind of just trying to find their niche.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of
or fun. Just you know trying like they're running on the actual campaign, you know whatever it is for the position. I love your example. We always go back to the Water and Soil Board. Got to really put somebody on there.
We really need some good. Conservative
or liberal.
I mean, it's a conservation
right,
board.
Right, it doesn't.
But the ironic part is that a conservative person on the conservation board, these are 2 different uses. This is there, and there of the word conservative.
It's a very good example. I appreciate that. Not that there is another position for the Water and Soil Board. Thankfully, we don't have that election or that race this time.
No, this time, I think, is anyone fighting over library boards?
No.
No library boards?
I don't think so. Probably. Yeah, up in Sandpoint, I believe, actually. Now you're talking about now that you're saying about
the Sandpoint
it.
Library.
Yeah.
Is basically the Lexington at Concord of our time.
I think you slight the shot heard around the world kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay, got
yes.
it.
Yes.
Understood. Okay. We talked a little bit about locals, but I'm gonna spring it on you right now. Best election type movies.
Election type movies. Mm-hmm. First off, The Campaign with Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis is hilarious and a very accurate representation of just how
ridiculous.
Yes, our elections have become.
It's a very good point.
Our national ones.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, we find out that both guys are not good people.
No.
Even though there's one that definitely has some
morality. South Park made that very clear in their election one.
Yeah, you can't say those names.
You know, we can't talk about those 2 candidates, yeah. But that's basically what you're I mean
Have you ever seen the movie Election?
No.
With Matthew Broderick?
No.
For those of you who have not seen it, Matthew Broderick is a high school civics teacher.
Okay.
And Chris Klein and Reese Witherspoon are high school seniors running campaigns to be student body president. And Reese Witherspoon is your classic, I guess, like she was destined to be ASB president.
Okay.
We all knew that person that was like, oh, that's the class president. Chris Klein runs. He's the popular guy, the whole thing. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting movie. Kind of draws a little line in the sand on how certain people end up in certain positions, whether it be because they felt like they were destined to, whether they felt pushed into it, whether they thought they could just do it because it was something to do because they're the cool kid. That's a good one. So The Campaign and Election, those are 2 pretty good ones. Head of State with Chris Rock is always good.
Mm-hmm.
Man of the Year with Robin Williams.
Those are solid. Yep. I'm gonna go with Napoleon Dynamite.
Last week, Japanese scientists placed explosive detonators in the bottom of Lake Loch Ness to blow Nessie out of the water. Sir Cor Godfrey has summoned Scotland's local wizards to cast a protective shield around the lake and its local residents and all those who seek for the peaceful existence of our underwater ally.
There was a very good election in that one.
Yeah, I believe it spawned an entire line of shirts.
Yes. That still make it to this day.
Yeah, and I'm still like, you vote for Pedro and like all your dreams will come true.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still waiting for my dreams to come true. No, that's a good one. That one features another election where some dude wanted to make a little, he wanted to be good for people. Mm-hmm. Whereas the girl, what is her name? Oh man. What is her
the
name?
The gal in Napoleon Dynamite?
The girl who's running against him.
Yeah. I remember
her
long.
Stupid boyfriend?
Yeah.
When he claps after their dance.
Uh-huh.
Talk about punchable faces.
So it's election day. As this episode comes out, we'll probably have it out here before 5. So you guys still have some time to make it to the polls. Please go out and vote. These elections are very important. I know it's hard to get motivated sometimes to go out when there's nothing on the national ticket. Those high marquee races, but honestly, your local elections are the ones that are going to directly affect you the most and soonest.
I always thought it most was soon. Funny how people think the exact opposite.
Yeah, some people think the exact opposite, like the president. President's like, oh, that's the most important. No, it's not. 90% of what the president, the decisions that he makes will not affect you in any way, shape, or form, or it will take months to years.
Yeah, the elections where you're wearing the branded gear are usually the ones that aren't going to affect you.
Yeah, usually. But when it's
a safety pinned button that you're wearing, those are the ones you
vote. Yeah, vote bag of donuts.
Yes.
You know, Johnny bag of donuts. Yes. Those elections, that guy, if he wins in 3 months, he'll literally start changing your life around you.
Right.
Or has the ability to.
Or when you complain about him, he might respond.
Right. Our listeners, we got a lot of Idaho listeners, so they're probably aware of this, but the wheels of government don't move very fast. Have you ever tried to get anything done at the DMV?
Yes. Yeah. Most people just drive over here and abuse ours.
Oh, here in Shoshone. Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. But yeah, it can be time consuming. So, you know, federal and even state to a degree. Those elections, it takes a while, and sometimes it doesn't always affect you, but your mayor, your city councilman, those individuals, they play a direct role in your life and can make decisions. So please go out and vote. It's very important.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Since 1976, Jim Hammond has served Kootenai County residents as Idaho State Senator, Mayor of Post Falls, and on numerous state and local boards. As a Republican in Idaho Senate, Hammond built lasting relationships by putting aside party and working to govern for the good of everyone. Jim's focus during 40-plus years of service has been collaborative government, community safety, and building unified cities. Experience matters. Vote Jim Hammond for Mayor of Coeur d'Alene on November 2nd. Paid for by the committee to elect Jim Hammond.
Let's move into Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines, starting with October 30th, day before Halloween.
You want me to read this one?
Go ahead.
Headline, Silverwood to Dollywood?
Ooh.
This is by Bill Bewley. Gary Norton made one thing clear. Silverwood Theme Park is not for sale. The owner of the North Idaho Fun Park, which opened in 1988 and has grown dramatically since, confirmed this week that he was contacted recently by representatives with Hershend Family Entertainment. That company owns Dollywood in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, Kentucky Kingdom and Hurricane Bay in Kentucky, and Silver Dollar City in Branson, Missouri. Quote, I told them we're not for sale and had no intention of selling, Norton said. We enjoy what we do and want to keep doing it. Norton told the press that he was also approached about a partnership in areas that could benefit both parties in regard to theme park operations. Quote, they like what we're doing, he said. Rumors of the sale of Silverwood have been making the rounds lately. An anonymous note to the press said the paper, quote, should do a front page story on Norton selling Silverwood to the Hershend family. A former employee said that they too had heard rumors of an offer to buy Silverwood, but Norton decided against it. Silverwood Theme Park is located about 20 miles north of Coeur d'Alene, just off U.S. Highway 95. It employs 1,300? Wow, 1,300 in the summer and has attracted more than 650,000 annual visitors.
I can believe it.
Today, Silverwood includes Boulder Beach Water Park, has more than 75 rides, attractions, and shows. At more than 400 acres, it's the largest theme and water park in the Northwest. Norton said that while he's not selling Silverwood, he is interested in talking more with the Hershend Family Entertainment about ways they can collaborate and help each other enhance operations. Norton added that continued talks will include nothing in terms of any ownership changes whatsoever.
It's right up there with Hagedorn selling to Disneyland.
Yeah.
Let me clarify that. If anybody's heard that rumor, that is not happening. So
it's not happening.
That is not happening.
Jeez.
What? Bring up Star Wars up here. That'd be cool.
I mean, those lake cruises would get really interesting.
Ooh, make them themed.
I will happily dress up as Jabba the Hutt.
And
you can chain Princess Leia to me, and I'll just sit in one of the ferries out on the lake. And we'll just pretend that the lake is the Sarlacc pit.
Silverwood has been a fixture of this area as long as I've been alive, and I like the idea of it being owned by at least somebody semi-local. So that's a good idea. I'm not in any rush to see it sold to somebody else.
I just can't. I mean, the whole thing is so entrenched in North Idaho culture that I just can't imagine it being outsourced.
That makes sense.
To anyone else.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Running out of time. This is by Bill Bewley. The Kootenai Humane Society Board is considering new options to reach its capital campaign goal for a new home. Vicki Nelson, KHS Development Director, said the board met Wednesday night to review finances. The original bid of $6.5 million to build a new shelter was 4 years ago. Since then, the estimated construction price tag has risen due to increases in material costs. No matter what, though, KHS will be moving forward, Nelson said. It has no choice. Quote, "We won't be able to stay here," she said, referring to planned expansion of the Coeur d'Alene Airport and extension of Ramsey Road. Both developments include the KHS property at the north end of Ramsey Road. Nelson said the KHS board, which will meet again next week, will look at several possibilities. They include reducing the scope of the project, bank loans, and ramping up fundraising even more. The capital campaign has brought in $5.2 million, nearly 80% of its goal. Nelson made it clear that despite its latest developments, KHS will build a new shelter. The shelter's current home is more than 40 years old. Officials say it's too small for the nonprofit's needs to care for thousands of dogs, cats, and other pets that pass through its doors each year. So far this year, it has adopted out 1,275 animals and has a 95% save rate, considered one of the highest in the nation for similar-sized shelters. It's nearly filled to capacity now with dogs and cats in need of homes. Many are rescued from other shelters around the country, saved from being euthanized. Quote, "We're kind of running out of time," Nelson said. Nelson also said that the board considers building its new home with the $5.2 million on hand and do its best with those funds, but that would mean reducing the project and could end up costing KHS more in the long run, as it might not have the space necessary to meet the future needs. Quote, "That original plan will work," Nelson said. "It's a matter of how much the community wants to support it."
Interesting.
It's a good cause.
Kootenai Humane Society is one of those things that you just want to see succeed.
Yep.
Like, no matter, like, what the price tag, what's going on, sure, you're just like...
Well, and for the surrounding areas, you know, for, you know, Bonners and Sandpoint and out here in Shoshone, it's one of those things of, like, Kootenai Health, where what's good for Kootenai Health is good for the rest of the area.
Right.
Same for the Kootenai Humane Society. So, right. Initial success or total failure? Mad Bomber Brewing Company, located at 9265 North Government Way in Hayden, Idaho, is a veteran-owned and operated business that has been serving North Idaho since 2013. The Mad Bomber 8th Anniversary Party is this weekend, which means that Customer Appreciation Week is upon us. Come in anytime between November 3rd through November 5th and enjoy 50% off pints and growler fills. Be sure to also check out their anniversary party on November 6th from noon to 10 p.m. and experience the release of their once-a-year anniversary beer, the Barrel-Aged Imperial Stout Black Hand. This beer has been aged for 10 months in the 55-gallon Maker's Mark Private Select Whiskey Barrel, provided actually by the Coeur d'Alene Resort. Mad Bomber Brewing also offers a wide variety of North Idaho cider beverages for those who may not want beer. Located near Triple Play, come by and mention the podcast when you order to receive $1 off your first beer. Mad Bomber Brewing, recklessly brewed in Hayden, Idaho.
moving ahead, Sunday, October 31st, Election Day Survival Guide. This is by Madison Hardy. Just a little a disclaimer here. These are referring to Kootenai County elections. So if you hear any of this, it's all tied to Kootenai County.
Correct.
Candidates in the November ballot aren't running for president or senator, but they are just as, if not more, critical to shaping the community. Quote, "You have to take an interest in your local government because, quite honestly, you can have more of an impact locally than you can nationally," Kootenai County Clerk Jim Brandon said Thursday during a press podcast. "Nationally, we have 4 electoral votes. Here, every vote is amplified in importance. On Tuesday, voters will decide the winner of 36 local races."
Oof.
36. Contestants are competing for city council, mayoral, fire district commissioner, and school board trustees from Athol to Plummer and everywhere in between. Here is how, where, when, and what you need to know before heading to the polls on Tuesday. All polling places open at 8 a.m. and close at 8 p.m. To check your site, go to your official county website. Registered voters need a valid identification to receive their ballot. Those who miss the registration deadline can still vote on Election Day at their polling place if they present valid ID and proof of Kootenai County residency for at least 1 month. Valid forms of ID include passport, federally issued ID card, military ID, tribal ID, driver's license, current student ID, and a concealed weapons permit, or voters can sign a personal affidavit if already in the poll books if the voter's address or name has changed. They must show proof of residency and legal renaming. Having photo identification ensures residents get the correct ballot based on location, Brandon said. Quote, the old way of doing things was to lift open a poll book, scan forward until you get to the name, he said. Now an ID pops your name right up and gives you the correct ballot, and it eliminates any chance of getting the wrong ballot. Brandon has been at the helm of the clerk's office for 8 years. A significant aid streamlining the election process is the embracing of technology, he said. Specifically, electronic poll books and state services like VoteIdaho.gov have eliminated a lot of concern. Following the presidential race of 2020, a wave of election security concerns emerged across the country. Brandon assured voters that he and Chief Deputy Clerk Jennifer Locke run a tight ship in Kootenai County. If people know my history, they will know I'm going to make sure it's tight, he said. Every illegal vote nullifies a legal vote, and I take that very seriously. Other security measures at Kootenai County Elections Office include signature verification, watermarks, paperweight, coded door locks, and live stream ballot counting.
It's a lot of safety features.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, boy.
Here it's not a bad thing, though.
Here comes... It's a shame Chelsea's not here.
What?
This one would be right up her alley.
This would be right up her alley. All right, moving on. Heck with Halloween. Here comes Christmas. This by Bill Bealey. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. It's back to normal in North Idaho. The Coeur d'Alene Downtown Association is going ahead with its 29th annual lighting ceremony parade on November 26th. Boo! It will be followed by the Coeur d'Alene Resort's annual lighting ceremony. Both were canceled last year due to the coronavirus. Emily Boyd, executive director of the Coeur d'Alene Downtown Association, said there's already been a lot of excitement and inquiries about the popular parade that packed thousands of people on Sherman Avenue the day after Thanksgiving. Marching bands, dancers, musicians, reindeer, snowmen, and one Santa Claus are expected to be in the lineup. I bet they're going to go, I don't know, down the street. Boyd said that it's wonderful to have the parade and the lighting ceremony back as both folks get to the holiday spirit. Quote, it's a great family event that brings everyone together, which is so needed in our community, Boyd said. The association accepting applications for the parade, sponsored by Idaho Central Credit Union, which attracts about 40 entries each year. The theme is holiday heroes and festive figures. Quote, all of those fun characters that people love, Boyd said. Quote, plan your parade entry around beloved characters such as heroes like Superman and Disney princesses, or traditional figures like Frosty the Snowman or Rudolph. The application form reads, your creativity to dress up your group, decorate your vehicle, or float your and express your joy for the holidays. Applications to participate in the parade will be accepted now through November 15th. They should be submitted by mail to Coeur d'Alene Downtown Association, 105 North 1st Street, Suite 100, Coeur d'Alene, 83814. After the parade, the public is welcome to gather on the Coeur d'Alene Resort lawn for carols and a countdown to a spectacular fireworks display, compliments of the Hagedorn Corporation. At the end of the show, the switch is flipped and over 1.5 million lights brighten the downtown area. Quote, I think that the lighting ceremony is one of the most magical days in Coeur d'Alene, Boyd said. You guys didn't catch the...
Chance really doesn't like parades.
This show is very anti-parade stance. I do not hate anybody for liking parades, and I hope you have a great time with yours.
That was...
And I actually even love the lighting ceremony. I even like that. I think that's very cool.
I'm going to go on record and say that I believe that first statement about him not hating people who like parades is false. Not that I'm one of them, but I don't care for parades either. But I don't know of a single human being who hates parades more than Chance.
I told Madison about the show's anti-parade stance, and she was quite upset about it.
Well, Madison, I guess you're going to have to find a new podcast.
It's like if a paper endorses a candidate and you're like, whoa, I didn't think that, but you're along for the ride anyway. So.
Basically, when you belong to this podcast, this media group, you are taking an anti-parade stance. It's very much like being on a national
news just this network. Podcast.
If you're on a national news network, you obviously have to toe the party line with that news.
Right,
and
right.
Now, the party line here is severely anti-parade of any kind. It doesn't matter if it's like...
doesn't matter what your cause is.
If you are...
I might even like your cause. Like, as somebody who didn't necessarily grow up...
I love pets. I love dogs.
Yep.
No, I don't need a dog parade.
I don't need a dog parade.
I will.
Let's have a petting zoo.
Yeah.
Bring the dogs out.
You want to go to Macy's? That's cool. Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade.
Not
necessary. It's a waste of helium.
So much helium.
Yeah. It really just is. And then you can get, because even there are the groups out there that aren't so good that they have parades.
Mm-hmm.
Like, park your car and let me walk by.
So everybody want
you to drive by me.
Parades are an equal opportunity type of event where anyone can throw one.
Yeah, right. Right. That's the worst part.
That might be their biggest drawback.
Yeah.
Other than it's kind of like watching NASCAR where you just kind of know what's going to happen. So
right.
Like what's going to happen at this parade, Josh? They're going to walk from point A to point B.
You know, never mind. I can't. I'm really dark today. I can see that.
Going, I think it's because it's election day.
I'm going. Yeah.
It's election day. We've
my cynicism.
Everybody, we're channeling everyone in the Hagedon News Network right now because we're all stressed because of it.
Yeah,
like I can feel it. I know we even canceled our editorial meeting today because everybody's just nope. I'm gonna be up till 1 a.m. doing this. Thanks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Headline for Monday, November 1st. Wow, November. Four Generations of Vikings by Hannah Neff. School pride runs strong in this family. 18-year-old Maya Reitz will be the fourth generation of Coeur d'Alene High School graduates come May. She represents the sixth generation of the family line born and raised in Coeur d'Alene. Her great-grandpa, great-uncle, great-aunt, aunt, and mom are all part of the school's history in trophy cases, signs, and photos. Quote, "That means a lot to me," Maya said. "I love this place and these people. The Viking spirit is contagious." The earliest relative to attend Coeur d'Alene High School was Maya Reitz's great-grandfather, Thomas Jacobson. He graduated in 1943 when the high school was located on 7th Street and Montana Avenue in downtown Coeur d'Alene. Each generation played sports, and Maya's great-uncle, Ron Jacobson, mayor of Post Falls and a 1974 Coeur d'Alene High School graduate, said he had fond memories of playing for the same school as his dad. Quote, "I enjoyed my teachers and coaches and often think back on the good times we had," Jacobson said. "I always cheer for the Vikings, unless they're playing Post Falls," he added with a laugh. Maya is the current ASB president, following in the footsteps of Jacobson, who was ASB president in 1974. "I always loved being a Viking," said Jacobson's sister, and a 1979 CHS grad, Anna Jacobson Wood. "We had so much school spirit." Christy Jacobson Reitz, Maya's mom, who attended CHS from 1993 to 1994, said she could remember senior pranks, such as the one year where the pits were filled with water and goldfish. Christy Reitz's family home was zoned for Lake City High School when it was completed, so she and the rest of her younger siblings finished school there. Quote, "But the saying here is, once a Viking, always a Viking. So I hold strong to that," Christy said. "I was blessed to be a Viking for 2 years of high school, and I'm proud to be a Viking parent." Each generation also had educational influence from Larry and Eileen Bieber, longtime teachers at CHS. With so many ties between each generation at CHS, Christy Reitz said there was something truly special about being a part of the school with so much history in her community. Quote, "The Viking family extends beyond the walls of the school and provides a common bond among community and family members," Christy said. "I think any alumni you ask would say the same thing. They feel that family kind of pride in their school."
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Moving on, nonprofit strives to do more for local homeless families by Ellie Goldman Hilbert. Family Promise of North Idaho serves an average of 18 families in Kootenai County facing homelessness each year. About half of those serve are children, and most of them are under 6 years old. This week marks Family Promise Week, an effort to bring awareness to the 2.5 million children who experience homelessness each year in the U.S. 1 in 16 will become homeless before they reach first grade. Quote, "The calls we get for help are heartbreaking. A suicide in your family, a debilitating diagnosis, a car wreck when there isn't any extra to take take time off work to heal or get your car fixed. No child care and the inability to work from home and caregiving for a parent or child are all external circumstances that prevent families from being able to keep their head above water 365 days a year, said Cindy Wood, executive director of Family Promise at North Idaho. Homelessness is a situation, not an identity. We are here to transition people into stable housing with the tremendous support from our community. Wood said Family Promise is working with four families and has about 20 or more on the radar. The kids who go through situations like these are three times more likely to be placed in special education programs, almost nine times as likely to repeat a grade, and seven times more likely than peers to commit suicide, said Jonathan Green, a board member and public relations representative of for Family Promise of North Idaho. COVID-19 has greatly impacted clients, Wood said. Quote, in such a tight housing market, the thought of losing your home is practically an insurmountable obstacle, she said. The families we are seeing are more stressed and dealing with so much more underlying anxiousness than our pre-pandemic families. Family Promise needs funding, but there are other ways to help too. Volunteers, organizations, and religious congregations can host weekly meetings. FP provides training and support throughout the process. They are also seeking a real estate agent or agency to implement the program Keys to Good Tenancy for renters and for property owners willing to rent for to client families. Meeting basic needs like meals, space, and heat are first on the list. Families are hosted in a church or motel. 15 local congregations and one real estate agency provide meals. A case manager works with the family to get them back into steady housing. Finding qualified housing ensuring reliability of transportation, implementing child care or after-school resources and health care for all family members is attended to. Quote, families going through financial literacy programs and make a plan for any outstanding debt with budgeting, Wood said. We work with each unique family where they are. Our case manager provides encouragement, resources, and is responsible to the needs of the family. To contact Family Promise to find assistance or to help, Family Promise, that's FamilyPromiseNI.org or 208-777-4190. Family Promise is located at the bottom floor of St. Luke's Episcopal Church on the corner of 5th Street and Wallace Avenue and is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m.
You think St. Luke, the saint himself, is like, man, that's a nice Episcopal church right there, but I really like that Catholic one over in Wallace.
I don't think so.
Like, he has multiple churches named after him. Mm. But he gets to pick which one he prefers over the others.
It's possible. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
I don't know either.
I'd have to ask somebody that is up on that.
St. Luke.
St. Luke might know.
If you're looking for a refreshing locally made beer, check out Radio Brewing at 319 Main Street in Uptown Kellogg. The tap room is open 7 days a week, and they offer delicious craft beer and awesome snack food options. To learn more, visit radiobrewing.com or Radio Brewing, put radio in your mouth hole.
All right, that moves us into Tuesday, November 2nd headlines.
Yes, Kootenai Health COVID patients lowest in more than 2 months.
Oh, good news.
By Bill Bewley. The number of coronavirus patients at Kootenai Health declined to 89 on Monday, down from a record high of 150 nearly 4 weeks ago. It was last this low in mid-August. Quote, we are pleased to see the drop in census of COVID-19 patients, and we are hopeful that these numbers will continue to decline, said Dr. Karen Cabell, Kootenai Health Chief Physician Executive.
What a title.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. There were 33 COVID-19 patients requiring critical care and no pediatric patients. About 15% of the patients are breakthrough cases, those who have been vaccinated against the virus. So 15%. Quote, the overall hospital census is still very high due to the backlog of surgical patients and other patients who have delayed healthcare needs during this COVID-19 surge, Cabell said. Our staff continues to work tirelessly to meet the needs of every patient. The Panhandle Health District reported on Monday that the overall total deaths attributed to COVID-19 rose to 617. It was a little less than 4 weeks ago. The number of COVID-19 deaths in the Panhandle Health District reached the 500 mark. That means that there's been an average of about 30 local deaths each week attributed to COVID-19, most due to the fast-spreading Delta variant. Most of the COVID-19 deaths in the PHD, 564 or 91%, were people over the age of 60. There have been 19 deaths of those under the age of 50 attributed to the coronavirus in PHD. No one under the age of 18 in Idaho has died of COVID-19. Health officials continue to urge people to get vaccinated. While those who are vaccinated can still get and spread the coronavirus, it does lessen the effects of it and reduces hospitalizations. In Kootenai County, 64,689 residents over the age of 12 have been fully vaccinated, which is about 45% of the eligible population. In the Panhandle Health District, 94,006 of the eligible population is fully vaccinated. At 44%, that's the lowest of the state's seven health districts.
Okay. Those numbers are interesting.
I'll take things that don't surprise me for 200.
Yeah, that's fair. But, I mean, overall, it's good going down.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, as we come into the flu season.
It's good. I mean, and with holidays coming up, too.
I mean, this is right here is where last year things picked up.
We'll see.
So,
yep.
I'm hoping that this isn't just like a calm before the storm.
Right.
I mean, that's what it's been. That's the trend. It's been wave and then calm. And
sure.
Then wave and then calm.
We got to think at some point, unless it mutates again, there's got to be a point where it levels off because A, it's done as much damage as it can. Right. B, you've got vaccinated population going up. C, you've got natural immunity going up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you've got these factors at play that eventually it can't just keep going. Like right. There's obviously going to be waves up and down. And right. I think everybody's expecting that it'll probably go back up after the holiday season. But I mean, you got to think at some point it can't keep going so high.
Right.
All right, moving on. Woman, cats escape blaze. This is by Bill Bewley. Angel Tesk woke up to smoke filling her house Monday just after noon. Quote, I immediately grabbed my phone and called 911 and started grabbing cats, she said as she stood outside her home at Reed in Wyoming. There is no way in hell I would ever leave them. Tesk and several cats escaped from the fire believed to have started in the garage, which was badly damaged with the contents inside mostly destroyed. Firefighters at the Northern Lakes Fire Protection District and Coeur d'Alene Fire Department carried a number of burned and charred items onto the driveway at the home in Rathdrum. The main section of the home suffered smoke damage but was saved from the flames. NLFPD Fire Chief Pat Riley said the cause and origin of the blaze were under investigation. Quote, nobody was hurt and we're doing our best to keep it that way, he said. Tesk, who lived there with two other young women, fled wearing a shirt, jeans, and no shoes on a 40-degree day. A friend gave her a jacket. Firefighters retrieved shoes for her and the home. A neighbor told Tesk they could come to his home if they needed anything. Quote, we're right here, he said. Thank you, Tesk said. Seriously, thank you. The man who declined to give his name said he had lived there for 45 years. He said they just wanted to do what they could as they know what it was like to face tough times. Tess, crying and coughing, said they didn't have insurance. She has two jobs and has been working late hours. She believed the blaze started in the furnace in the garage. Sam Goodman, who lived in the home, arrived about 30 minutes after it started. She held one of the cats that was singed and bundled up in a towel. He's a grumpy cat, Goodman said. She was glad all six cats seemed to be accounted for. She wasn't sure where they would be staying or what they would do next. Well, I'm glad everybody at least was okay.
Odd.
Mm.
Six cats, huh?
Very strange.
That's a lot of cats.
That is quite a few cats.
Dean Cooper is currently on the Wallace City Council and is asking for your vote on November 2nd. During his many years on the council, Cooper has worked hard to ensure the council remains fiscally solvent. He's served as president at times and worked on several important Wallace projects, including the roads project, the recent sewer system renovation project, negotiated police and fire district agreements, and the pool renovation. If reelected, Cooper hopes to keep the special Wallace community intact and to maintain the way of life that all the residents of the town cherish. He believes in having an open mind and will continue to provide a platform to the community to ensure the community's needs are heard and addressed. Remember to vote Dean Cooper for Wallace City Council Position 6 on November 2nd. Paid for by Dean Cooper for Wallace City Council.
All right, that moves into Show News Press headlines for November 2nd. Headline, high-speed pursuit leads to arrest. I worked this one up myself. A Wallace man under the influence of drugs was taken into custody Sunday night after leading Shoshone County Sheriff's deputies on a high-speed pursuit across much of the Silver Valley. SCSO Under Sheriff Holly Lindsay tells the news press that around 9 p.m. that night, dispatch received a call requesting a welfare check be made on a Frankie Hyatt, 38, due to their belief that he was high on methamphetamine and may be a threat to his wife living in Wallace, whom he may have a no-contract order on. We couldn't get that confirmed as of press arrest time. SCSO deputies responded to the wife's home not long after the call came in, and within minutes of their arrival, Hyatt was spotted leaving their home at a high rate of speed. Initially heading west on Silver Valley Road, deputies attempted to initiate a traffic stop on Hyatt, but had no success as he attempted to elude them while driving with no headlights on. Hyatt then entered onto Interstate 90 at the Silverton on-ramp and continued to try and lose the pursuing deputies, reaching speeds up to 100 miles per hour at certain points. Chase finally came to an end in Kellogg, where Hyatt exited off the freeway and parked in the Shoshone Medical Center parking lot. Though he tried, he was not able to gain access entry to the building as the doors were locked. After failing a field sobriety test, Hyatt was taken into custody without further incident and transported to Shoshone County Jail. While there, detention deputies had to administer naloxone, or Narcan, to Hyatt to counteract a drug overdose. Hyatt was booked for charges of eluding an officer and driving recklessly, but Sheriff Gunderson explained that further charges will most likely be added. Quote, thankfully it was a good outcome, he said. No one got hurt and there wasn't too much danger to the public, other than him driving with his headlights off at a high rate of speed at night.
Right.
Other than that. Everybody's fine. And could have been a lot worse. We know people that have done that driving the wrong way on the freeway.
Those are the more fun ones.
Yeah.
This is Heather Brandstetter, and I'm running for mayor of Wallace. I'm running on a platform of a Wallace for all of us. To me, that means protecting the things that make our town such a great place to live. It means accessible and friendly city representatives, affordable housing for homeowners and renters, responsible, transparent, fair, and accountable governance, proactive leadership that prioritizes historic preservation, a beautiful and scenic town with undisturbed views of the mountains in all directions, mutual respect, inclusion, and kindness for others that transcends cliques and grudges, a thriving business district to serve locals and tourists alike, year-round festivals, outdoor recreation minutes away, a city pool, community garden, and safe parks for our children. As Wallace mayor, I would work for all these things and more. Vote Brandstetter at the UCC Church. You can register at the polls when you vote between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. on Tuesday, November 2nd. Paid for by the committee to elect Heather Brandstetter mayor of Wallace.
Moving to the center of the page there. Headline, District Champ Tigers ready for carry. After sitting idle for a week, the time has finally come for the Mullen St. Regis Tigers to see their first playoff football action, and this one is going to be a fight. After clinching a first-round bye via their undefeated North Star League season, head coach Stetson Spooner and his crew of district champions waited anxiously to find out who they'd face in their quarterfinal matchup this week. They got their answer. Following their 54-6 beatdown of Timberline, the Cary Panthers earned the right to host Mullen in what is set to be a titanic matchup of ranked 1A Division II teams. Undefeated Cary is ranked number one in the state and boasts wins over several top-flight opponents, including last year's champs from Dietrich. Mullen has flirted with the top five in the media polls all season long, but even with an impressive 7-1 record, Spooner has rarely allowed his team to embarrass their opposition. The Tigers routinely held 30-plus point leads at halftime, only for him to rest his starters and give the freshman and sophomore guys some valuable reps. The fact that they really only played 2/3 of the snaps in their games make the Tigers' statistics even more impressive, especially when you factor that one of their wins was a forfeit. Junior quarterback Caleb Ball has completed 34 of 51 passes this season for 14 touchdowns and no interceptions, while carrying the ball 48 times for 563 yards and 7 touchdowns. Meanwhile, the vaunted two-headed rushing attack of Luke Trogdon and Adam Ball, the latter of whom played in 6 games, made statistical waves despite their reduced snap count. Trogdon carried the ball just 44 times this season and totaled up 748 yards and 14 touchdowns. He also caught 8 passes, 5 of which resulted in scores. Ball, who sat out the season finale with cramps, totaled 888 yards this year on 41 carries and 11 touchdowns. He also added 1 touchdown catch. The Big Three has run through almost everyone that they have encountered this year, with the lone exception of their season opener against Montana's top 8-man team from Thompson Falls, which was a competitive game to the final whistle. Spooner did the math, and the gaudy numbers became even more jarring when he explains them. Every 3.8 touches for those three statistically results in a touchdown, which is pretty close to what we had going last year, Spooner said. But what's different this year is when you include Blake Layton and Floyd Nelson, that number actually gets lower. Layton and Nelson are the Tigers' underclassmen, wide receivers, who collectively added 18 catches this year for 450 yards and 8 more touchdowns, which means anytime these five guys got involved in an offensive play, roughly every 3.5 plays resulted in a Tiger touchdown.
Wow.
3.5. Every 3.5 times that those five guys were involved, the Mullen scored.
That Mullen football team is fairly impressive.
Which Spooner aptly described as nutty. Carey is going to present a unique challenge for the Tigers that they haven't seen since that week one tilt with Thompson Falls. And after watching film, Spooner has the utmost respect for his opposition. Quote, their defensive line has an incredible motor, Spooner said. They run some familiar offensive stuff as we do, but they definitely get after it on both sides of the ball. Legitimately, the Tigers are just 3 wins away from a state championship and will likely face the steepest opposition of the entire playoff in this opening game. But they'll have to do it on the road in front of a hostile crowd. Quote, I'm proud of the work my guys have put in this season, Spooner said. Each year we've taken at least one step towards a state title, whether it was hosting a playoff game 2 years ago or winning one and playing in two last year. This year we have to start on the road, and if we win, then we're back at home next week. I think we're ready for that next step. Mullen will play at Carey High School this Saturday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time in the State 1A Division II quarterfinals.
All right. Well, go Tigers.
Go Tigers. They're our last. They're one of two of our final teams standing. We have Wallace Swimming and Mullen Football.
I think when we get into the Sandpoint headlines, we've got some congratulations for them, don't we?
They are still going. They're still going.
Oh, they're doing quite well.
Their football team is the number one 4A football team in the state.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. All right. Don't forget to vote Kevin Kessler for City Council. Kevin Kessler brings over 20 years of public service to the position of Osborne City Council member, which includes 15 years as an Idaho State Police trooper and 9 years in the Idaho Army National Guard. He took an early retirement from the Idaho State Police in 2021, but while he was there, he was the local resident trooper in Shoshone County and a canine handler of a drug detection canine. He was also part of the Domestic Highway Enforcement Unit that specialized in criminal interdiction. While at ISP, he received a national award for his efforts in drug interdiction and also received a life-saving award as well. He currently serves in a full-time capacity as an associate pastor at Real Life Ministry Silver Valley in Pinehurst and has served as a leader in that church for approximately 14 years. He enjoys volunteering in the community as a youth soccer and baseball coach and also a 3rd to 5th grade leader in Christian-based youth program called AWANA through Northwest Christian Teens. He has lived in Osborne for over 15 years and both he and his family love the community. If elected as an Osborne City Council member, Kevin Kessler plans on having a strong relationship with not only other council members and government officials in the Silver Valley, but more importantly with the local community seeking input on current and future issues. He wants to make sure that citizens in Osborne are having their voices heard by the council and respect is being expressed to those citizens. From public input he has received, he also plans on working toward finding solutions to the ongoing housing crisis, enacting an ordinance to allow domestication of chickens within the city limits of Osborne, seeking out grant opportunities to support infrastructure including traffic safety and business expansion, and renovation and efficient use of the current City Hall and Police Department building and work towards better solutions with blight issues within the city. Remember to vote Kevin Kessler for Osborne City Council on Tuesday, November 2nd.
Well, the old chicken laws, those can get kind of contentious. Staying with Shoshone, side rail, Osborne to host new holiday craft fair. The holiday season is now upon us, and Osborne will be the first Shoshone County to kick off the festivities with a brand new holiday craft fair. Event coordinator Charlene Leaker said vendors are looking forward to displaying their crafts since the much anticipated Osborne Fall Craft Fair, which is usually held at Silver Hills, hasn't taken place since 2019. Leaker said that with no craft fair last year, Silver Valley crafters jumped at the opportunity to get involved once again. Quote, I put an ad up on Facebook Marketplace and got much more response than I thought I would, Leaker said of the event, which will host up to 20 vendors. People are eager to get out there and sell, and I think buyers are eager to buy. Due to there being limited space, Leaker said that she made sure that there will be no duplicated crafts, which will also guarantee shoppers are provided with diversity while at the fair. The craft fair will also tie in the holiday tradition of giving back to the community, as all of the vendor fees will be donated to Meals on Wheels, a nonprofit organization that delivers fresh home-cooked meals to homebound senior citizens in the Silver Valley. Leaker, who is a weekly driver for Silver Valley Meals on Wheels, said, quote, since the Silver Valley Senior Meals on Wheels are providing the overall space, we were excited to be able to keep the fee at a low cost to the vendor, and in return, the vendor fees went right back to the Meals on Wheels. Leaker, who just published her first book, The War Within, will be at the fair along with fellow local author Brian Lee, selling and signing copies of their books. The Holiday Craft Fair will take place on Saturday and Sunday, November 6th and 7th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day at the Osborne Senior Center, next to Stein's IGA and behind P1FCU.
Well, that'll be fun to go to.
We always love a good craft fair.
I do. I do. We are very pro craft fair on this podcast.
Pro craft fair, anti parade. It's an easy stance. It's
a simple one.
It's honest work.
Yep, it is. It is. We don't hide from you on this one. We don't skirt around the issues on this show. We just tell you how it is.
Watts Appliance has been providing incomparable customer service to the Silver Valley for over 50 years. The family-owned and operated business has a wealth of knowledge regarding appliances and the brands that they sell. Whether you're in need of a new washing machine or have questions about refrigerators, Watts Appliance is ready to help. Visit wattsappliance.com or stop by and visit them at 3 North Division Street in Pinehurst.
Hey there, Sandpoint. This is Jason Welker, and I'm running for a seat on City Council. I have served as the chairman of Sandpoint's Planning and Zoning Commission for 2 years, and during that time, I have advocated for responsible growth and development that respects local values. As a city council member, I vow to engage the public to seek input on the path that growth will take in the next 10 years, so we can assure that Sandpoint remains the place we all love for people who live here today, while assuring affordability and quality of life so the children growing up here will be able to call this place home when they are older. This message is approved by the committee to elect Jason Welker for Sandpoint City Council.
All right, that takes us into Sandpoint, Bonner County Daily Bee headlines, starting with Sunday, October 31st.
You got this one, dude.
All right. Food bank relies on community to help. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. Just as at the nation's grocery stores, supply chain issues are creating challenges for local food banks to keep their shelves stocked as well. Quote, we thought in 2021 we'd see a little relief, Debbie Love, Bonner Community Food Bank Executive Director, said. But for the rural areas, it's been a challenge and an educational price to just understanding the food chain and how that, when the local stores are so low with food on the shelves, the food bank is going to be as well. Adding to the challenges was a move by regional food bank Second Harvest to end its food purchase program due to those same supply chain issues, Love said. By writing a lot of grants and thanks to partnerships with local grocery stores, community donations, and support, Love said she is working to navigate the supply chain challenges for facilities in Bonner County. CARES Act funding has helped, as has a national focus on food banks. Though research and talking to other food banks, she's reached out to larger food suppliers and brokers in the Mideast and Southern California, ordering food by the pallet as well as daily trips to local stores to pick up items near their expiration date. Quote, we've been trying to be creative on how we can access food to come here to our rural food bank, Love said. The rural areas really have been hit hard. While food ordered through Second Harvest also came on pallets, there are more of them now, and more of which need to be stored locally. A third bay was converted to a storage area for pallets, and local contacts are letting them store pallets at an overflow warehouse with food brought to the food bank on a weekly basis. By working with a broker, Love is able to give her budget, what she has on hand, and what she needs. They negotiate with suppliers and companies on her behalf, and then let her know what they can get and what it will cost, such as a recent purchase of canned chili and stews, she said. Demand for the food bank again on the upward swing after dropping over the summer and in 2020 due to federal programs, Love said. That decline followed heavy use of the food bank at the start of the pandemic, coupled with a sharp drop in volunteers. Quote, in March of 2020, we had 90% drop in our volunteer base because many of them are in that at-risk stage, so they wisely stayed home, Love said. And then we also had a 25% increase in our clients, so it made for the perfect storm where, you know, less volunteers, more clients need. And then also some of my staff as well stayed home. They were nervous about it. We didn't know what to expect. The change in seasons also has meant an increase in the number of clients the food bank serves, now sitting at about 1,600 families per month, roughly about the same number as served by the Post Falls Food Bank, said Love. However, she said it's important to note that the local food bank serves the entire county, with distribution sites in Sandpoint and Priest River. While demand seems to be spread throughout the county, the need is growing on the county's west side as more people move to the area, Love said. Demand has grown from about 150 families in a month to about 440, prompting expansion of that community's food bank and changes to how it operates. In Sandpoint, the food bank is seeing nearly 10 new families a week, with many of them working families with children, many new to property or elders on a fixed income. Many families are facing homelessness due to the housing crisis hitting the area hard. Many of those families are either working multiple jobs or attempting to find additional jobs in an attempt to make ends meet. While a common misconception says that those who use a food bank are lazy, Love said that that's far from the case. Most are working poor or turn to the food bank when they've run out of options. The supply chain challenges also have been put a kink in the food bank's longstanding Thanksgiving program, in which those are in need are given a turkey or ham, canned pumpkins, cranberries, and yams. Love contacted local grocery stores who are getting her as many turkeys as they can, but that total, while large, fills just over half of the 800 turkeys needed. That leaves her with about 350 or more turkeys to find in order to be able to help those in need. Individuals who are able can buy a turkey and donate it to the food bank, with some of the local stores keeping them on site until they can be picked up by the food bank on one of its daily visits. Cash donations also can be made, which will help the food bank buy additional turkeys as well. To donate to the food bank, learn more about its services, or find out how to volunteer, go online to foodbank, that's FOODBANK, 83864.com. Or on Facebook, Bonner County Community Food Bank.
Awesome, awesome.
Yep.
Also in that edition, application week, busy one at Sandpoint High School. This is by Emily Bonsant. Figuring out the maze of college applications and post-secondary education and career options is never easy. Last week, Sandpoint High School seniors got a helping hand as the school held its annual application week. This week gives seniors dedicated class periods to apply and research secondary education and career options with the assistance of high school staff through the Apply Idaho program. The program is sponsored by the Idaho State Board of Education in partnership with Idaho's employers and the state's Workforce Development Council. Apply Idaho's comprehensive clearinghouse of resources and tools pertaining to education, training, and career exploration and development, with the mission to demystify the process of planning for your future and breaking it down into actionable steps. Demystify.
I like that.
The program was piloted at Sandpoint High School in 2016, with only North Idaho College participating. Currently, there are 12 Idaho colleges and universities participating in the program that is now used across the state. The post-secondary education staff at Sandpoint High School partnered with the English department to have senior classes last Monday through Wednesday spend class time dedicated to the Apply Idaho program. Seniors not enrolled in the English class were pulled out of different courses throughout the week to allow them to participate in application week. The week wasn't all work. Staff kept the work upbeat by providing raffles, games, and snacks for the students. Application week isn't just for college applications. Students who do not plan to attend college spend that time working on resumes and brainstorming their career path with counseling staff. Sandpoint High School staff assisted students interested in joining the military by using scheduled time to study for the ASVAB and connect students to recruiters. Students interested in pursuing apprenticeships and certificates such as HVAC or getting their commercial driver's license or going to cosmetology school were assisted as well. Quote, the best part of Apply Idaho Week is that we get to touch base with each student on what their plan after high school might look like, Angie Dahl, the newest member to the post-secondary education staff at Sandpoint High School, said. The staff's mission is helping students create options so that they have choices after graduation. Dale said that students know that they need to take the time and make the steps toward their post-graduation goals. The goal is to create a space for the students to do so, said Dale. She said there's an engagement and camaraderie amongst the seniors as they researched and applied themselves to accomplish and establish their goals.
I always love when schools do this for all their seniors. It's such a great thing when the counselors get involved and make sure that these students... Nowadays, there are so many opportunities for kids to go to college. And I think one of the biggest detractors is that it's hard to go to college because it costs a lot of money.
College tuition is a political buzzword now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm walking this out right now. My oldest son is a senior.
Yep.
And he brought home college pamphlets. He's mm-hmm. looking at trade stuff. He's thought about military. Mm-hmm. He got a good score on his ASVAB. Like all these things... It's a lot.
Yep.
And as a student, I remember not taking it seriously. Hayden's taking it serious. And I'm super overwhelmed as a parent.
Right, right.
So if I'm overwhelmed, I'm sure he probably is too.
Yep, absolutely. Don't have time to wait in the drive-thru? Try ordering on the McDonald's app and picking up your order without getting out of your car. The McDonald's app is a fast, easy, and convenient way to order all of your favorites, including the new crispy chicken sandwiches. Try the new crispy chicken sandwich, the spicy chicken sandwich, and the deluxe crispy chicken sandwich today at your locally owned and operated McDonald's at 820 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I'm loving it. That moves into Tuesday, November 2nd, headlines.
Ooh.
Headline, Homeschool Academy improves literacy through musical theater. This is by Emily Bonsant. Oh, the things you can think of if you're willing to try. In the case of the Homeschool Academy, like those lyrics found in the ones of the songs from Seussical Jr., it may be more than things you can learn when you're having fun. But in the case of the play being presented by the school students, the audience gets to come along. The play is directed by Courtney Roberts, a very immersive project. Monday marked the production's first big rehearsal. Before, they had mostly worked on blocking, so the big lesson of the day was student focus. Quote, I'm so impressed by the students' dedication, said Roberts. 34 students are included in the play with two acting as stage managers. Robert said that the musical is a good way for students to learn communication and confidence all while having fun. It's not just students behind the play, but parents are involved with building the stage as well as help during rehearsals. Parents Tawny McDonald and Chloe Davis assist the directory corralling the students and keeping them on task as well as providing assistance. McDonald heads up the costume and prop department, and Davis is musical support. Melinda Rossman, head teacher and principal at the Homeschool Academy, said that the school had received a Panhandle Alliance for Education grant and used the funds for literacy through theater. The play is not just to get students on stage, said Rossman, but to have students practice their literacy through word comprehension and acting using their new vocabulary. She said that using through theater, students expand their vocabulary faster than if they were just reading. McDonald and Davis agree. They said that prior to auditions, some of the students were hesitant to participate in the play since they felt that they, quote, were not good readers. Now, those students are the main cast, said McDonald. It's not just reading skills that the students are learning, though, through the play, but leadership, working together, and confidence. With the age mixing from first to eighth, said McDonald, the older students are taking the younger kids under their wings and mentoring them. They are stepping up and developing leadership skills. Quote, earlier, the older students were a little bossy, but they have developed their leadership skills, McDonald said. The Homeschool Academy has partnered with the Sandpoint Musical Conservatory, which is how they have gotten in touch with Roberts and past directors. The Seussical Jr. is the third play that the school has put on with hopes of many more productions and to continue the use of theater to progress student literacy. The Seussical Jr. will be at the Panita Theater thanks to a generous anonymous donation. Doors open at 6, Friday, December 3rd, for a 6:30 p.m. performance. The December 3rd show is invitation only for parents, friends, and family. Saturday, December 4th is the community show. Doors open at 11:30 a.m. for the noon showing. All performances are free. Well, it's good that they're getting some thespians up there.
Thespians. What a fun word.
That is a fun word. I think that's it, Josh.
I think it is it.
Once again, we'd like to thank Andy Boyle for sponsoring this episode. Andy Boyle is the current commissioner for Sub-District 3 for Kootenai County Fire and Rescue and has been in the position for almost 4 years. Remember to vote Andy Boyle for Kootenai County Fire and Rescue Sub-District 3 commissioner today, November 2nd. Paid for by Andy Boyle for commissioner. All right, everybody, thanks again for listening in. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.coeurdaluepress.com, shoshonenewspress.com, bonnercountydailybee.com, or thebonnersurreyherald.com. If you listen to us on a podcatcher, please subscribe and or like and or follow us so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. And give us a like and follow on the North Idaho Now Facebook page for the exact same reason. Josh?
Yes, sir.
Anything else?
No, just stay tuned tomorrow for your, I don't even say tomorrow, tonight and tomorrow for election results.
We'll be hard at it.
Burning the midnight oil.
That's what we do as journalists.
As journalists.
Fun night. All right, everybody, get there and vote, and we'll see you on Friday.
Bye-bye.